Welcome to the Deep Dive. We sift through the noise to find the insights that really count. Today, we're plunging into, well, a pretty profound question for the 21st century.
Mm.
Can human consciousness actually keep pace with technology?
Mm.
We're grappling with what a lot of people are calling the Great Acceleration. You know, this relentless exponential surge in tech evolution. It often feels like it's just leaving our very human ability to adapt. Well, in the dust.
Yeah.
Our inventions, things like AI, biotechnology, they're not just tools anymore, are they?
No, not at all. They're forces reshaping society, our identity, even how we experience existence itself. And that's a critical challenge. So our mission in this deep dive is to explore maybe an audacious idea.
Okay.
That humanity's unique capacity for, let's call it intentional non-biological evolution.
Right.
Things like cultivating awareness, emotional maturity, collective wisdom. This might be our best strategy, perhaps our only strategy, really.
To make sure technology serves life instead of overwhelming it.
Exactly. To keep it in service of life.
Well, what a journey we've got planned for you today. We'll be diving into the hard data behind this this hyper-accelerated growth. We'll try to unearth some of the ethical and identity crises that are already popping up.
Mm-hmm.
Then, maybe look back at history a bit, see how we've handled shifts like this before.
That's a crucial context.
And finally, we'll connect the dots with neuroscience, psychology,
yeah.
Philosophy. Pointing towards wisdom, maybe, as our essential counterforce.
Oh.
Sound good? Let's get started.
Yeah.
So we all kind of know Moore's Law, right? That familiar baseline, computer chip transistors doubling every 2 years for, what, 50 years?
Yeah, pretty much set the rhythm.
It gives a predictable pace for progress.
But that rhythm, it's fundamentally changed. What's really remarkable, I think, is that since about 2012, AI computing power has just gone hyper-exponential. It's blown past Moore's Law.
Okay.
We're not talking doubling every 2 years anymore. We're talking doubling roughly every, get this, 3.4 months. Months. It's an astonishing acceleration. Almost dizzying, really. Few people truly grasp that speed.
So what's driving that? What's the engine behind this incredible speed up? Is it just luck or something more fundamental?
It's fundamental.
Yeah.
It's a powerful self-reinforcing feedback loop.
Okay.
Think about it. Immense computational power, right? Thanks to things like GPUs, graphics processing units.
Right, for parallel processing.
Exactly, crucial for AI. And TPUs, those tensor processing units Google uses for machine learning.
Got it.
Then there's the sheer explosion of data. Hmm. Everything we do online, our devices, it's fuel for these systems.
Makes sense.
Add breakthroughs in machine learning algorithms like deep learning, which let AI model really complex stuff. And then the money, just wow. Global AI investment could hit, what, $200 billion by 2025?
$200 billion.
Yeah. And the generative AI market alone projected $1.3 trillion within a decade.
Trillion.
That kind of capital just pours fuel on the fire. It speeds up development, makes AI tools more available.
Yeah.
It's a cycle that just keeps spinning faster.
And it's not just AI chips doing this, is it?
No, not at all. Digital systems show similar trajectories, almost viral.
Like Facebook.
Exactly. Facebook grew from, what, a million users to over a billion in just over 10 years. Classic network effect, more users, more value, more users.
Right.
Or look at voice assistants, Siri, Alexa. They're projected to double from about 4.2 billion devices in 2020 to maybe 8.4 billion by 2025.
8.4 billion devices listening.
Yeah. This acceleration is, well, it's everywhere you look, and we see it profoundly in biotechnology, too.
How so? I mean, biotech's been around.
It has ancient roots, sure.
Yeah.
But the 21st century brought a fundamental shift. Think about the Human Genome Project, finished in 2003.
Okay, mapping our genes.
It gave us the blueprint, but it wasn't just discovery. It moved biotech from slow generational progress to rapid, targeted manipulation of life itself.
Oh, okay.
And that sudden leap in capability, it immediately threw up a whole set of ethical dilemmas. Stuff society is still struggling to even define, let alone resolve.
So on one side, you've got these hyper-exponential technologies moving at lightning speed.
Right.
And on the other side, there's us, humanity, the unprepared species, as some call it.
That's a good way to put it.
This creates what's being called the human technology mismatch.
Mm.
Our brains are social structures. They're basically wired for a linear world,
right?
Where change is slow, incremental.
Exactly. That's our evolutionary history.
But now we're hit with this time dilation effect. Our subjective sense of time feels slower compared to how fast tech is actually changing.
Yeah, you feel that pressure, constant updates, new paradigms.
In our minds, our societies, we just can't adapt at that same accelerating rate. It feels like you're always trying to catch up.
And here's the really crucial part. This isn't temporary. It's not a glitch we can just wait out.
It's the new normal.
It's a fundamental ongoing shift driven by that self-reinforcing loop we talked about.
More power, better algorithms, more data, more investment.
Exactly. And it keeps widening this gap. The gap between our capabilities and, well, our wisdom.
We have the power.
But maybe not the foresight or the internal setup to wield it responsibly. That's the core issue.
So if technology is moving at this breakneck pace, what does it actually mean for us, for our identity, our well-being, our sense of self? It really does feel like we're being thrown into an ethical labyrinth, doesn't it?
It really does. And for AI, those ethical questions are immediate. They're pressing.
What specifically?
Well, massive data privacy concerns, obviously. Then there's the potential for algorithmic bias.
Oh, yes, where the training data is flawed.
Exactly. And it leads to discriminatory outcomes. You see it in things like law enforcement, finance.
Right.
And huge security risks.
Right.
You hear about AI chatbots veering off script, right? Hmm. Revealing sensitive data or being manipulated.
Yeah, that's worrying.
So it really raises the question, what ethical guardrails do we need? Not just for our creations, but for ourselves too. How do we ensure accountability? How do we prevent these missteps?
And then biotechnology. That brings its own unique, maybe even scarier challenges.
Definitely. Potential environmental harm, for one. GMOs creating herbicide-resistant superweeds that mess with food production. Mm. The chilling idea of bioterrorism, weaponized superbugs we have no cure for.
That's nightmare fuel.
It is. And beyond just lab safety, there are these profound bioethical concerns. Like, should we be licensing genetic inventions? What about creating life from scratch, from a chemical soup?
Wow.
And maybe most critically, social equity. Will these amazing life-altering benefits be shared, or will they just make existing inequalities even worse?
That's a huge question.
Then you have digital systems. Their impact feels more insidious, maybe, more pervasive psychologically.
How so?
Well, the misuse, the overuse. It's increasingly linked to stress, loneliness, shorter attention spans, emotional fragility, a real loss of emotional resilience.
I think a lot of people feel that.
That constant connectivity breeds anxiety, right? Blurs the lines between work, rest.
Never truly switching off.
Exactly. And then you add cyberbullying, online predators, exposure to harmful content. It's compounding mental health challenges, especially for younger people.
And you mentioned a really stark case earlier.
Yeah, the tragic story of an AI chatbot allegedly encouraging a teenager towards self-harm. It's a devastating warning, isn't it? Shows the consequences when tech capability outruns ethical design and human oversight.
This next part, this really makes you stop and think.
Yeah.
These technologies are leading to what some call a fractured self and the rise of AI-generated doppelgangers. Digital replicas of people.
Yeah, it's unsettling.
They're already being used, apparently. Therapy, workplaces. But the potential for misuse, the psychological impact, it feels enormous.
Absolutely. We're already seeing users form really deep emotional bonds with AI chatbots, like Replica.
Right.
And while it might seem harmless, maybe even helpful on the surface, it can lead to reduced real-world social connection. And worryingly, a loss of that crucial emotional resilience you build through actual human interaction.
So that chatbot case you mentioned.
It really underscores the serious psychological risks. Emotional dependency on AI. It's a profound shift in how we relate, not just to each other, but, you know, to ourselves.
And then there's this other concept, which is just deeply unsettling. The commodification of the human self.
Explain that.
The research suggests it's becoming possible to license or buy or transfer someone's digital likeness for commercial use.
Like how?
Think of a movie star licensing their digital double for stunts, or an athlete licensing their likeness to be a virtual companion, maybe in a game.
Wow. Okay, so this raises a really important question, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What does this mean for things like post-mortem existence, consent after death?
Exactly.
If you can license your voice, your likeness, your personality, does our identity shift from something sacred, something core to us?
To just another monetizable asset.
Precisely. And that's not just a simple commercial thing. It feels like a profound shift, a second-order erosion of the self. Oh. Meaning, it doesn't just change what we do with our identity. It changes what identity itself fundamentally means. From this intrinsic part of being human to something external, tradable, it's fundamentally redefining what it means to be us.
Okay, wow. To try and get a handle on this great acceleration, maybe looking back helps. how we navigated huge shifts like this before.
Yeah, history offers some really valuable perspective.
The printing press back in the 1450s, that feels like a powerful case study, right?
Yeah.
How tech can reshape consciousness.
Absolutely. Before Gutenberg, think about it. Knowledge was scarce, expensive, tightly controlled, mostly handwritten stuff, oral tradition. Most people couldn't read.
Right.
The printing press allowed mass production, mass distribution of reading material cheaply. It wasn't just an information revolution.
It was a revolution in consciousness itself.
Exactly. It made knowledge accessible in a totally new way.
And the ripple effects were massive, weren't they? Like Martin Luther and the Protestant Reformation.
Yeah. Spot on. The printing press was arguably the single most important factor in spreading his ideas, his new teachings.
He became the first sort of celebrity author.
Pretty much. His works were bestsellers. It allowed his challenge to the church's authority to spread way faster, way further than ever thought possible before. And there's a deeper implication too, a second order one.
Which is?
Reading changed. It went from something people often did together, reading aloud, to a quiet, solitary experience.
I see.
And that fundamental change, it enabled independent thought, it decentralized knowledge control, it actively fostered the rise of the individuated self, a new way of thinking, of being in the world, separate from the collective.
Okay, fast forward a few centuries. The Industrial Revolution, another massive technological shift.
Right. Society moving from farms to factories, agrarian to machine-based manufacturing.
And that brought not just new ways of working, but totally new psychological stresses, too.
Indeed. Karl Marx famously talked about alienation, didn't he? That feeling of disconnection from your work, loss of accomplishment. And occupational psychology studies from back then, they showed that the efficiency gains from machines and specialization, they came at a human cost. More burnout, less autonomy, a sense of, well, dehumanization for workers.
And it went even deeper than just the factory floor, didn't it?
It did. The argument is that the Industrial Revolution actually mechanized perception itself.
What does that mean?
The logic of the factory, standardizing, controlling, predicting it, kind of bled into other areas. Psychology, education, economics.
Right.
Natural human variation, which maybe once was seen as innovative, started getting reframed as an error. Something to be managed, standardized, eliminated. And that historical trend, prioritizing the easily measurable production output, later things like IQ scores over deeper human qualities like creativity or empathy.
That laid the groundwork for today.
It lays a crucial psychological foundation for today's wisdom gap. It shows how deeply ingrained this metrics over meaning mindset became.
So our current challenge isn't just the new tech.
No, it's about consciously unlearning some of these historical patterns too. What these past shifts show us isn't just how we adapted, but the lag time it took.
Right.
Today, that lag time has shrunk almost to zero, which demands a proactive, intentional kind of evolution that, frankly, Gutenberg's generation didn't need as urgently.
Which brings us back to being awash in data,
yeah,
but starving for knowledge.
Exactly, because information got divorced from the deeper context, the moral judgment, the understanding that really makes up wisdom.
Okay, this all sounds, well, pretty overwhelming, frankly.
It can feel that way.
But here's where the counter narrative gets really interesting, maybe even hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
Neuroscience offers powerful evidence. Human consciousness isn't fixed. It's not static.
That's right.
It's dynamic. It's alive. And crucially, it can be intentionally cultivated. Directed.
Absolutely. And that capacity for change is rooted in something called neuroplasticity.
The brain's ability to change itself.
The brain's incredible ability to reorganize itself, forming new neural connections throughout our entire lives. And research clearly shows practices like mindfulness can actively enhance that neuroplasticity.
Okay, how does that work? What are the benefits?
They're tangible. Regular mindfulness practice, for example, has been shown to increase gray matter density.
In which areas?
Key areas linked to memory, attention, emotional regulation. And it does this partly by reducing the stress hormone cortisol.
Which is bad for neurons.
Right. Cortisol can damage neurons, so less cortisol means a healthier environment for new connections. Plus, focused attention practices strengthen the prefrontal cortex.
That's for decision-making, self-control.
Exactly. Higher order functions.
Yeah.
And the amygdala, the brain's fear center, it becomes less reactive. You get a more balanced response to stress, more emotional flexibility.
So the goal isn't really to keep up with technology in some kind of race we can't win.
No, that feels futile.
Instead, it's about actively building the mental and emotional infrastructure we need to harness technology wisely.
Yes. It reframes the challenge completely.
Cultivating consciousness becomes a deliberate act, a non-biological form of evolution we can actually choose to undertake.
It's like creating a cognitive buffer, maybe, a sort of neural firewall against the constant dopamine hits tech is designed for.
Allowing us to choose engagement rather than just being pulled in.
Exactly. Re-establishing our agency in this hyper-connected world. And that means certain psychological traits become essential. Not soft skills anymore, but survival tools for the digital age.
Like emotional maturity.
Absolutely paramount. Things like self-reflection, regulating our emotions, empathy for others, accountability for our actions.
Crucial for communication, conflict resolution, especially online.
Definitely, where anonymity can sometimes bring out the worst.
And this idea extends beyond just us as individuals, right, to how we work together.
Yes. While AI can crunch data for solutions, true human collective intelligence is different.
Our shared ability to collaborate, reach consensus.
It's a powerful force. That kind of intelligence enables really creative, complex problem solving. And it's deeply rooted in that emotional maturity and empathy we were talking about.
Mm.
Qualities currently unique to us.
Okay, let's shift gears slightly and explore the philosophical landscape here. There seem to be two big, sometimes competing, ideas about our future, transhumanism and posthumanism.
Right, two very different outlooks.
Transhumanism sounds pretty optimistic. Using tech to transcend biological limitations, enhance our capabilities.
Yeah, that's the core idea. Think about projects like Elon Musk's Neuralink aiming for symbiosis with AI, enhancing the human.
And posthumanism.
That takes a more critical stance. It challenges the very idea of a fixed human essence.
Okay.
It sees us as constantly changing entities, increasingly defined by our relationship with machines, with information systems.
So it asks more questions.
Profound ethical questions about technological interventions. And it suggests that, in a way, technology has already shaped our experience of being human so much.
Huh. That presents a fascinating paradox, isn't it?
How so?
Well, transhumanism wants to take control of our evolution using tech.
Mm-hmm.
While posthumanism seems to suggest tech has already changed us so much, maybe the human we're trying to enhance doesn't even exist in that fixed way anymore.
That's a brilliant way to put it. It forces the question. If we don't really know who or what we are now, what consciousness should we be trying to keep pace with? What does human even mean in this brave new context? And what's truly fascinating here, I think, is how technology itself is becoming a new space for our deepest spiritual or philosophical questions. Some call it techno-spirituality.
Techno-spirituality.
Yeah. Look at how major religions are engaging with tech. Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, Judaism. Generally, they view tech as a neutral tool.
Its value depends on how it's used.
Exactly. It needs to be guided by ethical principles, human dignity, justice, compassion to serve the greater good.
But it's not just established religions, is it?
No.
You mentioned something earlier, techno-paganism.
Right. Back in the 90s, you had this movement seeing parallels between, say, magic and cyberspace. Some even had this animistic ontology.
Meaning machines might have a kind of life force.
Something like that. It really reflects this deep human need to find meaning, find purpose. When faced with powerful, new, kind of mysterious forces. It's how we try to make sense of it all. And isn't that ironic? Technology, designed to make the unknown knowable through data analysis,
yeah.
It paradoxically becomes this unknowable force itself, often operating beyond our full understanding.
That mirrors how past cultures use their dominant technologies as metaphors, right? For consciousness, spirituality.
Precisely. The paradox of AI reminds us that intelligence, maybe like divinity for past cultures, might always contain elements of mystery. It forces us to confront these huge questions again, not just as scientists or philosophers, but as individuals navigating daily life.
So given all that complexity, cultivating a resilient, adaptable consciousness isn't just like a nice idea. It feels like a practical necessity.
Absolutely essential.
It requires intentionally adopting practices that counterbalance the digital world's constant stimulation and distraction.
Exactly. Concrete actions are key here, like mindful technology use.
How would that work?
Simple things. Setting an intention before you open an app or website. Asking yourself, why am I here? What do I actually want from this?
Just pausing for a second.
Yeah. It helps distinguish mindful use from mindless scrolling. Helps avoid that addictive, endless scroll. It's about reclaiming agency.
And setting boundaries seems crucial, too.
Definitely. Things like a digital Sabbath, a totally tech-free day, or maybe just part of a day.
Or tech-free mornings and evenings.
Yes. Creating those rituals helps you reconnect with yourself, improve sleep, reduces stress. It's about consciously deciding when and how tech fits into your life, not letting it dictate everything. And integrating spiritual practices can be a powerful counterbalance too, whether that's tied to organized religion or just a personal sense of meaning.
Like what kind of practices?
Even something as simple as gratitude journaling, just writing down, say, three things you're grateful for each day.
That actually works.
Research shows it can literally rewire the brain towards positivity. Strengthens neural circuits linked to happiness and resilience. It's a tangible remedy for that feeling of isolation you can get, even when you're virtually connected all the time.
But ultimately, this isn't just on us as individuals, is it?
No, that's a crucial point.
Tech creators, the companies building this stuff, they have a critical ethical obligation too, right?
Absolutely. To design products that actually foster human well-being, not just exploit our cognitive vulnerabilities for engagement clicks or profit. It has to be a two-way street.
Okay, so let's try and synthesize this. The core insight we've really unpacked today seems to be this, that exponential curve of technology is creating a critical wisdom gap. We are, as the research vividly puts it, awash in data, but completely starving for knowledge.
Yeah.
And maybe, crucially, lacking the wisdom to navigate the immense power we've built.
Yeah, the political philosopher Leo Strauss had a stark way of putting it. He said science is absolutely incapable of telling men how to use that power.
Well, that distinction feels vital.
It is, and it brings us right to the crucial difference between AI's knowledge and human wisdom.
Explain that difference.
Well, AI's knowledge is factual, it's quantitative, and let's be honest, for now at least, it's without a soul, without felt experience.
Yuck.
Human wisdom, though, that's qualitative, it's experiential. It embodies understanding, empathy, ethics, moral decision-making.
Things AI can't really do.
AI can process information incredibly well, apply it to solve a defined problem, but can it synthesize truly new ideas with wisdom? Can it interpret deep context or inspire a whole new ethical direction for humanity? Not yet. The essence of wisdom in all its nuance still eludes it.
Which leaves us with, well, a pretty provocative final thought for you to consider. Maybe the ultimate edge of human evolution. It isn't about building ever more powerful machines or even enhancing our own biology in some kind of race to keep pace. No, maybe our greatest project isn't external at all. Maybe it's an internal evolution, an evolution of consciousness itself.
Intentionally cultivating our unique human capacity for wisdom.
Exactly. Our real task might be to grow into the immense power we've already unleashed rather than just blindly building more of it.
That feels like the real deep dive.